Welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast from Future Plus. If you're passionate about building a more sustainable future and curious about the business models making it possible, you're in the right place.
In each episode, we dive into the world of sustainable business, talking to founders, CEOs, and industry pioneers who are redefining success with the planet and society in mind. This isn't just another business podcast. At Future Plus, we're redefining ESG, environmental, social, and governance, by bringing you data-driven insights and future-focused actions that make a real impact.
From breakthrough technologies to bold new policies, Future Plus explores the strategies, challenges, and innovations driving the global shift towards sustainability. So whether you're a business leader, investor, or sustainability enthusiast, join us to stay ahead of the curve.
So hit subscribe and join us as we explore how data and action are reshaping the business world one episode at a time.
Hi, I'm Alex Smith.
And I'm Mike Penrose. Thank you for joining us today. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Sophia Kesteven, General Manager at TechZero, the climate action group for tech companies committed to fighting the climate crisis.
Sophia, thank you so much for joining us today. And as with all our guests, it'd be great to get a little bit of info about your background, how you got to where you are, and also TechZero.
Sure. Well, I mean, Mike did a great job of describing what TechZero is very succinctly, but I'm Sophia, she, her, and I, how did I get here? That's a very good question. Very squiggly journey up to this point. So as a bit of background from me, if you can't already tell, I was born in Australia and I grew up there, went to uni there, did the whole thing. Actually did an acting degree first up, but ironically it was a play that made me realise that acting's probably not going to solve the climate crisis. So then pivoted and went and did, you know, sustainable like environmental science at uni as well as philosophy. And I knew that I wanted to work in sustainability, but 7 years ago in Australia, led by pretty much, you know, climate denial government, very much a bastion of coal, and it is still very much a fossil fuel country, and it just didn't sit very well with me. So here I am in the UK. I came here, first of all, for opportunities, yes, but opportunities in sustainability first and foremost, because, you know, even if you've had a net zero plan that has since been scrapped, you at least pay lip service to climate change and the reality of it, and the conversations are being had, and there's so much activity and so much activity and startups and companies that are really grappling with what it means to be net zero and climate change. So I found myself working for renewable energy companies who then started TechZero, and I'm happy to give you a bit of a more of a background of that if you like.
Well, I think that's the interesting one. You know, you've got how many now? 33 countries that you work in, 350 members, including some pretty big names such as Monzo, Skyscanner, etc. Where did this all come from? How did it start?
I do have to have a caveat that I was not there at the inception, but I have been told the story many times. So it started with the then CEO of Bulb, Hayden Wood, and Gerard Grech, the CEO of Tech Nation, and both very intelligent people working in tech and with very good green credentials behind them. And they saw JetZero, which is a campaign to decarbonize the aviation industry. And they thought that there should be the same thing focused on tech. So they came together and brought the founding members of TechZero, which are, as you mentioned, like the Citymapper, Monzo, Revolut, Money Supermarket, just to name a few. I can name them all maybe later if you need me to. And they came together and decided on the minimum criteria that they could all agree on to that they could commit to put them on the path to net zero. And so these were to annually measure their emissions, publish those emissions along with the net zero plan, have someone on the board responsible and accountable for that plan, and to also communicate their net zero plans to the wider public and be really transparent about that. So initially it was just going to be this think tank or advisory of these companies kind of to lead the way in the tech industry, as it were. But then they just got so much interest from other tech companies asking, how can I be involved in this? The Race to Zero, the UN campaign, also reached out asking them to apply to be an official partner, which they did, and they were accepted. And that's because the commitments of Tech Zero align really well to the four, now five P's of the Race to Zero, which are pledge, plan, proceed, publish, and persuade. And so they opened it up to this to be more of a membership organization, a voluntary commitment to net zero. And I think they looked at that, saw how fast it was growing, and kind of went, oh, geez, we have to actually get someone to come in and manage all of this now. And so that's where I came in.
And just to add to that very impressive list of members, we are also are also a member of Tech Zero, very proudly so. And can you talk a little bit more about that breadth of companies that you're working with now? Because obviously it has massively expanded, and there is a list, part of that being very public and very transparent. You can go onto the Tech Zero website and actually really look at what everybody's doing, which I think is, you know, as well as get at support for how you can then create your own net zero. But can you give a little bit more sort of info on those companies that you're working with and how they're working with you?
Yeah, sure. So we're very agnostic when it comes to the kind of company that we want signed up or that we have as members. So we've got, I think 3% are corporates, which we classify as having over a thousand employees. So they are your Vodafones, your Hitachi, Ventara. And then the rest of them are SMEs. We have about 10% large, so over 250 members. And then the rest of them are SMEs. And we even have micro organizations, quite a few micro organizations, which have fewer than 10 employees. So we really want to engage the width and breadth of the tech industry, because Tech Zero's mission really is to get the tech industry to net zero as fast as possible. Ideally 2030, but being realistic, probably going to be closer to 2035, if not 2040, if everyone can put in their best efforts. And so our mission is to decarbonize the tech industry as soon as possible. And we do that by, first of all, making it really easy for companies to understand what net zero is, first and foremost, as a concept, because a lot of people still don't really have that expertise or that knowledge. So it's kind of demystifying that, making it less daunting, and then so empowering them to reduce their emissions and take climate action, and of course connecting them with each other to share their expertise, share what's worked, what hasn't, see what other companies are able to do. And just going back to the kind of companies that we have engaged and want to engage, we'd really love to engage more of the bigger companies, not because that's our focus, but because they are such a big part of the economy, and that as they have to measure these emissions and take climate action and report on them, that trickles down to all their suppliers and their customers, who are smaller tech companies. So if we can both make it easier for the small companies to talk to the bigger companies about what they need, about how what the bigger companies are doing affects their own transition plans, that would be ideal. So yeah, lots of different companies, all that we want to engage and work together with.
Do you have, really interesting, a definition for what you mean when you say net zero? Because I think it's a really good point that you made at the beginning of that people don't always know what it means when they say it. Mm-hmm. It's become sort of common parlance, but not necessarily with the same definition for everybody. So
yeah. So I'll draw on the Oxford University definition of net zero, as well as SBTI, which is to reduce your emissions as far as possible, down to at least 90 or 95% reduction, and then offset the rest using verified carbon removal. And that's a really key point. I think companies are still grappling with the difference between carbon neutral and net zero. Carbon neutral, you can just offset your emissions using kind of the standard ones that are out there, tree planting, what have you, or additionality things like clean cook stoves that are also really helpful. I will caveat that as well. These are things that need to be done, and they kind of broaden out the scope of sustainability and make it equitable. So it's not to say that those kind of offsets aren't beneficial. So that's carbon neutral, but then net zero is really doing the work internally within a business to reduce emissions as far as possible, as I mentioned, and then those 5% or 10% of carbon removals are things that actively take carbon out of the atmosphere. So that's your biochar, your kelp forests, as well as tree planting, but that's kind of, what's the word?
Has its own challenges.
Yes, has its own challenges as well. And there's so many good climate techs in that space as well, coming up with amazing solutions.
I think that's the interesting one, is the technology solution to this, and the climate tech stuff that actually removes carbon, because, you know, so many people think that, you know, carbon sequestration and carbon offsetting is removing carbon from the atmosphere. Mm. And so much of it is just removing or stopping us not removing carbon from the atmosphere.
Yes.
You know, selling not cutting down a tree as opposed to actually planting a new one, or selling the futures on carbon, which is why carbon offsetting, there are some great schemes out there, but a lot of it I always call the used car end of sustainability. You know, there's a few really good ones, but a lot of it is the front half of one car welded to the back half of another and sold as something different. Yeah. So I think that the tech solutions there are critical to actually removing the carbon that exists, as well as just reducing our own carbon.
Yes. And I do want to mention there as well that while those carbon offsets, I feel they have in the recent few years got a really bad rap. There have been really bad cases of mismanagement portfolios, people selling used cars essentially and lemons. But I think it's really important not to demonize carbon offsets as a whole as problematic. I think as long as they are well managed, transparent, and you can have those verifications, they're the ones people need to be looking at. So,
And I think that's potentially a tech solution, isn't it? How you create that verification, that traceability of what is a legitimate offset versus, because I couldn't agree with you more. There are some great used cars out there as well.
Yeah.
You know, why recycle rather than buy a new one? But it's that traceability and that ability to verify that it is doing what it says.
Yes, absolutely. And that would be more digital solutions, which I think we might talk about later on, are coming online, if that's a pun, pardon it, which will really help businesses to do that. Yeah.
I think sort of linked to this and a little bit off, you've got, you know, some real success stories. So, you know, most industry schemes get about 10% of organisations, you know, publishing their net zero plans, etc. You're up at about 33%, I think, of the membership doing it. But, you know, when you're a campaigner, creating change is all about storytelling. What are some of the stories of real success stories that you have in Tech Zero that you're proud of? When somebody says, what are you proud of with Tech Zero? What are the stories you come out with?
It's so hard because I don't like looking like I have a favourite child. Also, do I have to say Future Plus?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
In that case, Future Plus.
So should I said other than Future Plus?
Of course, other than Future Plus.
We both have children and both have favourite children. Yeah. So my son is in my phone as my favourite son 50% of the time.
Yes. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
okay.
So I like to keep it balanced.
Okay, yes. So sometimes, for the sake of this podcast, I'll have some favourites for now, but it'll change.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I'm most proud of, starting with that, is seeing companies go from absolutely zero, no understanding, not necessarily even caring about it that much because they've been asked by a supplier to measure their emissions and so they're doing it kind of begrudgingly. But then going from that to having a full-on plan, knowing their emissions, and then integrating it, taking action to reduce those emissions and having like eco warriors within their teams and having sustainability teams within a relatively short space of time, seeing that transformation, it makes me really proud. And there are a few ones that I could mention, such as Stays, which is a net zero hotel stays website. So they help businesses to travel with fewer emissions and use net zero hotels or more sustainable hotels. And the CEO of that confessed to me that he wasn't really concerned about the environment. He wasn't really an environmentalist when they started. Joined Tech Zero, learnt what net zero was, found some really easy solutions, such as switching. I mean, for them, they're a small business, which does make it easier. They do have the agility, but they switched where their data centers were located, and that got rid of 70% of their emissions within one go. And now they're completely pivoted their business to be a net zero hotel stays rather than just a general hotel stays business. So that was very cool. In terms of anyone who's heard me speak before, probably is already sick of hearing about this, but the key one that always stands out for me is Go Cardless. They were one of our founding members and they really picked up the ball and ran with it. So it went from committing to net zero through Tech Zero to hiring a sustainability manager who then did everything, did the measurements, did the reporting, implemented so many actions, came up with a travel policy, came up with, you know, a commuting policy, really engaged the employees as well, I think, and made it seem part of the Go Cardless culture. Not just seem, made it part of the Go Cardless culture. And that was all within 12 months. And they'd significantly reduced their carbon emissions within those 12 months. And it was, yeah. And then also because they were really supportive of Tech Zero as well, I think it was just a really lovely story. And as you say, yeah, it is the stories and the storytelling. And the fact that they did all this makes for such a good story that, yeah, that means they'll always be top of mind.
I think one of the big, the really interesting one is the publishing of plans that differs very much from a lot of, we talk about this a lot, but a lot of the other schemes, rating systems out there all seem to want you to try and report on what you've done in the past. And that seems to drive all the incentives towards retrofitting data on previously unsustainable practices into today's sustainability frameworks. People don't mean to greenwash, but when you're asked to say, what did you do and fit it to this framework? You're going to try and make it look as good as possible. I think when you publish plans and you put it sets all the goals towards achieving something, moving forward, being positive, optimistic. It's ambition more than past measurement. I think that's absolutely critical.
Yes, and it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I was reading this morning a report from Lloyds, I think, and the different opinions of businesses and business leaders versus investors. And the thing that lots of businesses are, I maybe shouldn't say afraid of, but businesses are struggling with, or say as a major challenge to committing to net zero or being really transparent about net zero and their ambitions, is matching that ambition to reality, being realistic in a future that is increasingly opaque and uncertain.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So, but it was interesting because the businesses were really worried about this, but the investors not so much. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a really good indicator that, yes, businesses are so scared of being seen to be greenwashing. They're scared of making these targets and ambitions and putting them out there publicly. But I think what we always emphasize in Tech Zero, and I'd love to see more of globally when it comes to reporting and actions, is that transparency to say, okay, we tried to get to this and it's failed for X, Y, and Z reasons, unlike certain large beverage companies who just quietly retract their ambitions to be made from recycled plastic. So I think the more transparent you can be, the more you can say, you know, we're trying for this, but we can't right now for these reasons, or this didn't work out because of this. That is so beneficial, and it will remove green hushing. It'll keep you safe from greenwashing. That's what I'd really like to say.
And I think people forget so often lessons we've learned from history. There were two, should we say, consumer goods companies in the past. And you know, my background's in risk management. And the best case study you ever learn is two consumer goods companies selling exactly the same consumer product, one of whom had a contamination scandal and tried to cover it up and got really nervous about reporting it and sort of did everything they could to do the recall, but as quietly as possible, and got absolutely slated and have never recovered their market position. The other one went out and went, yep, this happened. It was fine. We're transparent. This is what we're doing to fix it. And confidence in that brand went up.
Amazing.
And I think all the lessons from risk management is, if you go to the general public and say, this is the truth, this is what we've done, this is what we're going to try and do. Oh, we didn't quite meet it, but this is what we've learned. They'll have far more confidence in you than saying, oh, we're nervous about saying anything, because age-old lesson, in the absence of speculation, absence of information, people speculate, and speculation is always negative. No one ever says, oh, I'm sure they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to know who that is afterwards.
Yeah. I will tell you afterwards.
Yeah, I'd love to have that as a case study.
There's a statistic with the World Economic Forum that the highest emitting industries could reduce their emissions by sort of 4 to 10% by 2030 if they adopted digital technologies. And even on a small scale, your Go Cardless example, we work with Go Card. You know, that's one of the companies that we work with as a supplier to us, and I'm sure they don't know that. And, you know, that. But it is part of our story and part of our ecosystem. And so that adoption of those technologies, how important is it for businesses, I suppose, is a big sort of macro question. And how do we, I suppose the smaller one is, how do we encourage people to be aware of that? That if everybody does their part, that giant ecosystem that exists around you is all operating in the same direction. So is that something that TechZero is sort of taking on?
Yeah.
As a story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of the everyone doing their own part, I think the more companies engage with measuring, and I'm conscious that I'm talking a lot about measuring, but it is the starting point, so we'll start there.
You treasure what you measure.
Exactly. You can't manage what you don't measure, and other tropes. But the more people engage with it, the more they see that especially their scope three, so things that they don't have direct control over, is such a big part of so many companies' emissions. So the more they see, okay, so I can look after my electricity use or energy use and some other things like burning fuel in cars, everything else isn't up to me. So everyone's scope three is someone else's scope one and two, essentially. And so it becomes more apparent that it is an everyone problem and everyone needs to chip in and do something about it. And I think tech is so ubiquitous as well that it underpins almost every other industry. So, and I think there are things like tech and energy particularly that form the basis of almost every other organization, every other company. So if we can tackle those two, then the emissions of everything else should come down. And in terms of it is a really interesting stat, the 4-10% of global emissions could be reduced through digital technology adoption. First looking at that, some people might be like, oh, 4-10%, that's not very much. But if you go to the high end of 10%, that reduction, if we can do that by 2030, is the same as completely removing the footprint of the tech industry and the aviation industry combined. So it's a really awesome thing to aim for. So with the electrification of devices, we're electrifying more, increasingly using these electric devices, but because of the concurrent increase in energy efficiency, our energy usage has stayed fairly stable, at least in the UK. And I think the adoption of digital technologies can build on this. So digital technologies are things like Internet of Things, smart grids, digital twins, data analytics, AI, of course, cloud computing and blockchain, things like that. And the obvious effect for me of adopting these is that when a business adopts them, they will almost always reduce emissions, yes, but reduce costs through organizational or efficiency and operational efficiency. So on the very base level, I think adopting these digital solutions is all about being able to do more in less time for less money, because I think it always does come down to the back pocket. I wish businesses were purely driven by wanting to save the planet, but I know that's not the case. So I think these digital solutions are massively helpful, and the more that organizations like TechZero can highlight them to businesses first and foremost, but then really pinpoint how companies like yourselves, companies like Go Cardless, have utilized them really effectively, then I think more companies will get on board, because it's a scaling issue as well. We need to scale these really effectively because they all exist. The technology to fight climate change exists right now. We just need to get on board with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things we talk about a lot here and we find is intersectionality, the actual linkage between net zero, which is a very specific goal on greenhouse gas emissions, but wider environmental issues, biodiversity, reducing waste, you know, the knock-on effect it can have, but also socioeconomic issues as well, the ability for people to engage in the climate debate, the ability for people to put that as a priority when you're struggling with other so more, you know, complex social or economic issues. How much have you found that your focus on planning and driving people towards specific goals has then led on to wider debates on ethical business, on how you become a responsible business, on how you have responsible innovation? I guess around it, you know, one of the biggest discussions always on the electrification, which is all of a sudden people then start to worry about the origin of the minerals in batteries. And then that leads on to a social debate on, right, how do we do this responsibly? And so we're not creating, you know, good carbon reduction things in an unsustainable way, if you get my drift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think TechZero started focusing on the very basics of net zero in terms of telling companies how to measure, report and reduce their emissions. And I think when you are going into it in that narrow sense, we did it just to get people in the door, because we have to start somewhere, and we are trying to build out now that people have more of an understanding to those wider issues that you mentioned. But I think as soon as you do narrow the focus, that kind of draws everything else that you're not focusing on into its own kind of focus. So yes, always we get questions about biodiversity, about other additionality things. I've mentioned the carbon offsets already. But I think the really great thing is as well is that once these companies get in the door just focusing on carbon emissions and reduction, their eyes are opened up to the world of everything else you can do. And that can be daunting, but I think there are so many good companies now who are offering these services to engage with more of these. The conversations are being had. People are more aware of very easy things you can do to improve someone's lives, to look at your supply chain, try to be a responsible supplier no matter where you operate, and kind of build within your community and the communities that you operate in. I think more and more companies are finding those easy wins. But it is a really interesting space. And of course, the fact that you mentioned the minerals and the mining reminds me of a conversation that I had with James Donovan of OpenAI. Mm-hmm. Fascinating guy. You should get him on the podcast. And we were talking about trade-offs and what trade-offs we're willing to accept for leaps in technology. So I think for one example they put out was, are we willing to burn a certain amount of fossil fuel if it meant creating a technology that could save thousands of lives? Of course, we were very much just putting the world to rights. We didn't come to any answers. But with climate tech, like EVs, that's a really good example. It does come up at almost every event that in order to create these technologies currently, you hopefully not always and into the future, but currently we do need to mine things, we do need to extract, and we need to transport them over long distances, we need to make them, which usually means burning a certain amount of fossil fuels. So we are already making these trade-offs in everyday life, but I think the assumption that we're okay with those trade-offs is now being challenged, which is really cool to see as this conversation kind of opens up.
I think it comes back to that knowledge is power, Pete. Yeah. When you said earlier about, you know, they suddenly understood where their emissions were, they changed their data center and it dropped by 70%. For us, when we're working with clients, it's exactly the same. It's what questions are the right questions to ask, and then not necessarily what is the right answer, but how do I feel about the trade-offs that I'm making if I understand what they are? And it's that knowledge is power piece, and guiding people through that. And it's a lot less scary if you make it we always sort of describe it as having sustainable decision making as part of your process. It's a lot less scary, but you have to know what to ask, which is part of working with TechZero, working with Future Plus, working with, you know, sort of organizations like that I think can get companies to that point where it stops it being daunting.
I agree. And I can't remember who it was. It was definitely a TechZero member who I think just took it off Patagonia, but they were saying that their decision making with every major decision, they think, what would the planet think about this? And I think that's such a good way to do business.
And also I think, you know, the EV one the retort I often use is, look, there is no perfect technology out there at the moment, and never in human history have we ever made a great leap forward to the perfect solution. You have to go through iterative phases, and the iterative phase we're in at the moment is better than the last, and as long as the one afterwards is better than the last, the one before it, then we're moving forward. But we're not going to, if we sit and wait for hydrogen fuel cells, for example, the investment will never go into the companies who are creating the EVs now to develop that technology. Yes. So we have to go through these phases in order to get the end result.
Yeah. I think that's the same with carbon removals especially. Exactly. I think everyone's waiting for this big thing which will just take all the carbon out of the atmosphere, but we can't do that unless people are investing in the solutions that exist
now. You've got to fail to move forward. It's the classic investor startup kind of conversation, right? Mm-hmm. It goes back to the, and I think that sort of mentality between the states and us as well, of, you know, it's okay to not get things right if you're moving in the right direction and you're transparent and honest about what those things are.
And that old adage, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Exactly.
So. Just not an endangered
one.
No, not an
endangered
one, please.
And, you know, we talked a lot about collaboration, a lot about, you know, relationships and what you're doing with companies, but how much of your work is with governments, and what is, you know, where do you sit with that, and how do you support, I suppose, that relationship between your members and policy and what the future looks like as well?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's something that I'd really love to do more of, and we have touched on it, and we're part of Tech UK, which is the UK's tech advocacy group. I can't say that. Advocacy. Yeah. I've never had a problem with that word before.
The UK's, it's amazing what a microphone is.
There we go, yeah. The UK's tech advocacy group. And we're also part of the Climate Tech Policy Coalition. And so these are all groups that we are part of, and we come in and have those conversations about things that tech companies, smaller tech companies in particular, need from the government in order to be able to thrive, such as you know, removing barriers to investment, ways that they can help them scale to avoid the valley of death, which is talked about a lot. And then we also are really lucky to be part of, or to be supported by, two really politically engaged companies, so Octopus Energy on the one hand and Tech Nation on the other. And both through them and places like Tech UK and the Climate Tech Policy Coalition, we are able to feed in members' thoughts on various open, what's the word that they, what's when they do, open consultations, that's it. We're able to feed in on various open consultations, most recently about REGOs, Renewable Energy Guarantees of Origin, Renewable Energy Certificates, things like zonal pricing, and the effect that would have on electricity prices and how businesses would, you know, relocate if necessary. So we are doing a bit in terms of feeding back members' thoughts and giving them the opportunity to engage in those conversations, but it's definitely something that I would like to do more of and kind of build on.
Amazing. Unfortunately, that is all that we've got time for today. A massive thank you to you, Sophia, for joining us. And I think a huge amount there for people to sort of get their teeth into. If you'd like to join the conversation, please leave a comment or question in the comments section or email us at info@future-plus.co.uk. And please remember to hit the subscribe button for future episodes. And if you'd like to find out more about Future Plus or Tech Zero, please visit the links in the description. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.